The Brian Golf Show is presented by Pinned Golf, a rangefinder company that is lowering your scores, not your bank accounts. I will say this. I don't even know if I'm supposed to say this, but Melissa and I got a package today, two packages today, actually. We were both got our own packages from Pinned Golf, and we have new rangefinders. I don't know if I'm supposed to be talking about this new rangefinder, if I'm supposed to share a picture, video, or anything about it, but it's even better than the Blackjack. I know nothing about it other than the fact that the display, for one, way clear, reminds me of a rangefinder that would cost like $500. All right, so with that being said, something special coming from Pinned Golf here. They've got a new rangefinder, new name. Until then, go to pinnedgolf.com. You can save on the Blackjack, which is normally $200. You save a little bit of money when you use promo code BrianGolf. Welcome to the show. It's just me today, but it's you too, because I took a lot of questions on Instagram last night. I didn't take a lot of questions and answer them on Instagram. I maybe did like 10 on Instagram. The rest were save it for the pod, right? I like talking equipment, obviously, as a custom fitter and as a, I'll say a club nerd. I am a club nerd, but what I'm learning is I am not as nerdy as I thought. Meaning I don't care as much to know everything as I think some people do. I kind of let things kind of come to me naturally in a sense. Like when I start talking about equipment and, you know, I start researching things, like I don't seek out information all the time just to make myself smarter. I really only seek out information when I need it. It's kind of like history. All right. You have the world at your fingertips with Google. And if you want to know something that happened in history books, you can Google it, right? Well, I do the same thing, you know? So when you guys ask me questions, majority of the time, if I don't know the answer, I just simply Google it and I try and get you the answer that way. But before we get into that, I will just say this, a little personal talk, man. Can we talk about HBO Max and how good that's been? That Snyder cut of the Justice League was sick. I just watched Kong versus Godzilla, or Godzilla versus Kong, or is it King Kong? All I know is that was fun. And I miss going to the movie theater. So until then, HBO Max it is. But between, like, is anybody else doing this right now? Between HBO Max, Netflix, and then, like, on demand, like for us, we have Xfinity. Xfinity on demand. You still struggle to find a movie here and there every once in a while. But I like when they do these little releases. I'm just ready for the movie theaters to open back up. That's a big thing that we do in our families. We go to the movies, and I've always been that guy. My whole life, I've gone to the movies. Multiple movies in a week, multiple movies in a day sometimes. So if anybody else does that, you know, HBO Max to fill some of the void, because they've got some good movies, some classics on there, but I like that they're doing the releases. Mortal Kombat's about to come out. Are you kidding me? It's a rated R. Totally going to let my 10-year-old watch it with me. Judge me all you want. Let's get into some questions. Equipment questions. I'll just start with some of the ones that I answered because I think that's kind of the easiest, right? And we have a sale with steesandtees.com this weekend. More Grayson coming, obviously. Lots of Grayson. We do a lot of Grayson. And I just had a question where somebody asked, like, where do we in Nordstrom Rack buy our Grayson stock, the overstock? And I guess the secret is that we don't buy any of it. Uh-huh. We're selling somebody else's shit. Yeah. And that's the best way to do business, right? Speaking of business, running a business here, and it's closed. We're closed. Had like three or four people walking next door from just in the 3 minutes that I've been on this podcast. I've had three people do this thing, and it's the goofiest thing. You can barely see in our windows, and they come and they put their face all the way up against it. I wish I had a camera pointed at these windows so you could see these people. They're really just going down to get some ice cream or something like that, or maybe go to The Loop, great restaurant here next door to us. You can ask Johnny Wander. We had fantastic pizza and burgers when he was in town. But I'm at the shop recording this pod. Weird things are going to happen. Throw me off my game a little bit. And that was one of them. Anybody watch the World Golf Match Play, or what is it? WGC Match Play? The Dell Technologies Match Play? Billy Horschel, the champ, he is a Jacksonville guy. He lives here in Ponte Vedra Beach, not far from us, right there by TPC Sawgrass. And a good friend of mine's buddies with him, and they're both Gators, so I know that they're very thrilled for the victory. I would be very thrilled for that check. My wife, Mel, obviously you know Mel, and my father-in-law, his name's Mike. We'll just call him Mike. He goes by Papa in our household. They loved watching this match play. They were so into it. And I think if you listen to like all the big golf guys would be like, man, this match play tournament sucks. It's terrible. It's not vindicative of who is actually the best. And they, the casual golf fan, freaking loved it. They loved it. So that's just some food for thought, if that's what you say. So getting to some more questions here, or getting to some questions. A lot of these are very, very equipment focused. I'm going to get deep in some, and some I'm just going to skirt right through. This one, why do companies move, have they moved away from traditional lofting? This is one, loft jacking. If you actually listen to the podcast with Chris Foschel from Mizuno, he explained this a lot like an engineer would. And the best way I can kind of interpret this for you is this: they have a better understanding of optimal performance on the OEM, on the manufacturer's part. So if you think about like the loft getting stronger, but at the same time, the CG, the center of gravity, is getting lower and deeper, so allowing for a higher launch. So you're getting like, you know, higher MOI, more forgiveness, higher launch, more ball speed out of the deeper CG, and then the lower loft. So if you were to actually take a traditional loft with some of these club designs, the ball would just go extremely high, launch in a terrible window, and you would actually have a lesser performing golf club. So it's not so you can just hit the ball farther. Everyone, it seems to think that everyone thinks the golf industry is malicious. We're just trying, and everyone's just trying to make the game easier. It's hard. We'll get into that with my clubs that I'm currently, I think I'm making a big shift. If you listen to this podcast or you follow me on Instagram, you know what's been in my bag and you know the type of clubs I love. You're going to be surprised here in a bit when I tell you some of the clubs I'm thinking about putting in the bag. This is a good one because we get a lot of love for Srixon. Do you think Srixon irons have the best potential combo options? Any other brand? Obviously, like the new ZX4, 5, 7, those Z-Forged, you know, yes, great combo set. But it's going to depend on the player for sure. And you have to obviously mention TaylorMade's P-Series irons. You know, I've seen sets of 790 and 770, although that one's a little weird to me. More likely probably to see like 770, 7MC, maybe even 7MC, 7MB with like a long iron from maybe skip into the 790. I don't know. A lot of potential, you know, opportunities there for a combo set. The MP line from Mizuno, the JPX line, both of them can be blended a little bit. Even Cross, you know, I've seen some JPX Tour mixed in with some MP20 blades. So Callaway, the Apex lineup. There's the Apex DCB, the deep cavity bag. A little bigger. Yeah, wider sole, a lot of offset. I haven't had a great success with them fitting yet, but, you know, part of that is the guy that we get in here and the clientele that we get in here, we have a lot of really good players. I'll just say that. We have a lot of really good players. I have a buddy in the industry. I won't name names, but he sends me videos of people in his fitting bay, and, I mean, daily. And I just don't deal with that many players that struggle. And so what I'm getting at is I fit and have more players that are of the Apex MB, X-Forge CB, Apex Pro, and even Apex for sure, like 95% over maybe the 5% of a DCB candidate. Okay, so with that being said, I'm still getting used to that product, but DCB and Apex could be a cool little combo set for somebody. Apex and Apex Pro obviously is one, and then Apex Pro and Apex MB is even one. And I guess, I don't know, I'll go into this. So you got to look at Callaway, but I'll go into this and talk. Somebody said, what would be your dream bag for 2021? So we talk a lot about my golf clubs on this podcast. That's fine. Still waiting for things to get right, so we can do the good old what's in the bag video and really kind of put pen to paper, I believe is how you say that. So I was asked what my dream bag would be for 2021, and I am almost there. And so far, I can tell you this. The Sim 2, 8 degree, it's not going anywhere. Project X IM10, 60 gram. They have a low spin version and a mid spin version. I've got the low spin version. and a 60-gram TX in my driver, my Sim 2 8-degree, and I love it. I'll explain more on my build here with another question that I had from somebody that's pretty cool. Get into the build aspect of that. But then I've got my same Sim Max Rocket, the 14-degree fairway wood. This is last year's Sim Max, and an RDX Blue 70-gram TX from Project X. It's a club that I've got some really good shots, like kind of in the memory banks. So that one's not going anywhere. Sim Max 3 Hybrid, that's one that like 100% could come and go as far as that goes. I still do like a good 3-iron or 4-iron that can, you know, go nice and far, but, you know, knock it down low. But I do hit this hybrid pretty well. It's got a hazardous black 90-gram 6.5 hybrid shaft in it. The new RDX is really good in the hybrid. I think it's a stock option for like Titleist. I know they have them in their TSI hybrids, so maybe look for that if you want to try that. And then we'll skip irons and we'll go to wedges. So I've got Cleveland RTX Zip Cores. I have a buddy, you know, that works with the tour. He sent me a 50, 56, and a 60, and I bent the 56 to 55. So I go, you know, 50, 55, 60 in the raw. Had them kind of shaped by my man, Todd. I'll just call him Todd the Builder, as I used to call him. He's the one man I trust with the grindage of my wedges 100%. So I've got that with like a little bit of a T-dub grind going on my 56 and 60, and then a little bit of a blunted edge on my 50. But so I've got the 50, 55, 60 is where they're set now. He's sending me a 46 degree, then I'm going to bend to 45 in the wedge for like a pitching wedge. So that way I can if I have the Rep 33s, such a sharp, it is very different hitting the 9-iron versus the pitching wedge, the very sharp sole on the pitching wedge. It's not my cup of tea for a lot of the shots that I try to hit with my pitching wedge. So that being said, I've got one of those RTX Zip Cores coming in a actual pitching wedge loft that I'll mess around with and try and get in the bag. But as far as irons, so I can say this, I've tried the Rev 33, I tried the MP20. Nothing performs better than my King Forged MBs. So if nothing's performing better than my King Forged MBs, then I'm not going to replace my irons. You know, I'm just going to keep riding it out. I'm hoping I didn't build those things so perfectly to where, you know, they just can never be beat. But I have a set of Callaway Apex Pro on the way, and they would be on record as the biggest iron I have used in, God, since the P750, maybe, from TaylorMade. And that's not even that big of an iron. They're a little bit bigger than that, maybe. I had a brief stint with some PXGs, the first gen 0311s, kind of for fun. Those are bigger than these Apex Pros, but I've been told, don't do it. Don't go away from the blades. Don't go away from 90% of the irons that you've been talking about. But Apex Pro, I've just been messing with them, hitting them, and I really think I could lose. I could drop some strokes on the good old 18-hole score and the handicap with these irons in the bag. So I'm going to give them a little bit of a run, build them up, Dynamic Gold X100s, and see how that goes. But we're not calling it permanent yet. Thought about waiting on the TCBs. But I talked a little bit to my boy Wonder, and I don't know if I'm as intrigued by the TCBs as everybody else probably is. How did you jailbreak your Sim 2 driver? This is the one I alluded to just a little bit ago. So jailbreak the Sim 2. How did I unlock it? If anybody watched my review on YouTube of the Sim 2, and I don't want to call it a review, but it was. And it was a positive review as far as looks, feel. I mean, I could see that there was potential there. I just knew that I had to do some craftsmanship to get it going. It spun way too much. 2,900, 3,000. I mean, it was nothing. It was easy. I couldn't even tow it and get it to 21, 22, 2,300 spin. So we ordered a bunch of heads for inventory, and I just grabbed one of the 8-degree heads and said, all right, well, I'm just going to put this one in. And I'm going to try and see if this one can knock my Sim 9-degree out. I have a 1-degree tour sleeve on it. So by a tour sleeve, it only adjusts 1 degree up or down. And I think there's a couple notches in there for half degrees, but I've got it set on higher, which is 9 degrees. So 8 degree head set on higher. I got, you can get these from TaylorMade, the TPS weights, the front weight. You can get them in a bunch of different weights. And I believe I have an 8, 9, or 10 gram TPS weight up front. Now, this is the tricky part because I don't know how you're supposed to replicate this. I got lucky. I know a guy who knows a guy, or I know a couple guys that know me. And I was very lucky that one of them came through for me with an 8 gram rear weight. The stock weight in a Sim 2 is 16 grams. So if you think about it, I took 6 grams and moved it up front, 6 extra grams of weight with the TPS weight up front, give or take a gram, because I'm sorry, I can pull my driver apart, but it's like 10 feet away from me. I don't want to do that. So I've moved more weight up front, and then I've taken the weight out of the back. I've taken 8 grams out of the back. And then I went and added, 4 or 5 grams of hot melt, kind of neutral towards the toe. So my head weight now is like 199 or 198. But I've moved the CG forward by getting rid of that 16 gram and putting the 8 gram in the back. It turns out this 8 gram weight that I am bragging about, because I'm thinking, oh my God, I know how to fit these now. We can really make something happen for Sim 2 people that are spinning it too much. And the 8 gram weight is Tor only. So that does you no good. In fact, it really does me no good because I only have one. And as a fitter, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I've got a million of the original Sim weights in lighter and heavier. So this trick with the Sim is able to do all the time, but with the Sim 2, this 8 gram weight, I guess, is really expensive to make. They're trying to find a way to make it cheaper, is my inside source. And if they can, then all of a sudden it can be mass produced and they'll sell them. They'll be a part of, people's fitting builds and fitting carts and whatnot. But until then, God, you got to know somebody, get you one of these 8Gs. I'm just talking to my friend. We'd be like, hey, look, once a month, can you just sneak one for me? TaylorMade will never notice, right? But that's how I jailbroke the Sim 2 and got it to spin less for me. The shaft didn't hurt, by the way, switching to the IM10, the 60-gram TX that I talked about. Feels so good. Hexcel technology. I don't know much about it other than it feels really solid. Like, it just feels like the shaft is super thick. Like, there's nothing hollow about it. It doesn't feel like a hollow graphite shaft. So that's like kind of, I don't know how to explain it. It feels like a nice solid thwack every time you hit it. I like this one because it brings in kind of a certain type of golfer. What's the biggest problem in most 10 handicappers' bags? And I said, club-wise, it's very tough to call because it differs all the time. But I just think for the most part, when we're talking about a 10 handicap, that is a person that can hit fantastic golf shots. And I think they lean on that time that they hit that fantastic shot or pulled off that shot a little too much. And with that, they continue to always try and pull off that shot. And they don't quite play within themselves as well as I think they should or could. So I think, like, for instance, many players, they come in here and they tell me, well, I hit my 7-iron 180. Okay. But then when they start hitting balls, they'll hit 10 balls and maybe one of them goes 180. And they're like, yeah, see, there it is. And it's like, no. When I ask you how far you hit your 7-iron on average, I want to know how far does it go on average? And the answer is probably something more like 173, 174. So if you're going out and you're playing golf that way, there's a little bit of an opportunity for you to mess up a lot just based on your course management and club management. So, gapping sessions are important. I don't want to just sit here and say gap, gap, gap. You need to get a gapping session because everybody's going to come and book in a gapping session. Which is fine, but when people are trying to book fittings and I've got 7 gapping sessions throughout the day, it's kind of hard to book a fitting that way. Let's go to the next one. And what handicaps, speaking of handicaps, do you believe custom fit golf clubs become truly worth it? The answer, every fitter will say this, is all playing abilities, 100%. You know, for me, it's like, especially if golf is something you invest a lot of time in, a little bit of money in, and you would like to accelerate your potential, any potential improvements, you want to make that happen faster. Sometimes you got to think, if you're a 25 handicap, you're a 25 handicap potentially because your golf clubs are stopping you from being a 15. So if you think, you know, that just because you're a 20 or a 25 or you're a beginner, that you can't benefit from the right set of golf clubs, you're definitely cheating yourself out of potential improvement just based on golf clubs. Cool? All right. Let's go to some that I haven't answered yet at all. This will be kind of my first. I'll just kind of run through some of these. Have you seen the new Mira irons from Nicholas? These are so good. So someone asked me, what about Mira irons would you change to make them fit what I want in an iron? So what I want in an iron from Mira is just simply some lighter head weights, because I can't, at playing over length, it really actually gets super heavy when I try and get a Mira club in my hand. And there's not a lot I can do, you know, maybe drill out the hosel a little bit, you know, just like a little deeper in there, take out a little bit of weight. But for the most part, a Mira is a Mira. I would also put the Golden Bear logo on every single one of them, those new Jack Nicklaus irons. Ian at TXG just did a little unboxing, and Alex Etches did the same, and both of them just got me turned the hell on. Oh my gosh, this is unrelated. Oh my gosh, this is so unrelated to questions, but one of these questions revolving around Autoflex, I did answer it, and I guess I just did the wrong comparison for somebody, because one of these famous YouTubers reached out to me and said, you know, they said, hey, look, this was sent to me. They said it was spec'd out and it'd be a perfect combination with my driver setup. And it's like, all right, cool. Real story. That's not how shit works in the equipment world. You can't just send somebody something or have a conversation with somebody and be like, hey, this is it. Except for like a lab putter, they do mobile fits and those are pretty spot on. But I was talking about Autoflex shafts, and I just said, look, you know, I think these companies have the attitude that after a quick convo or look in the bag, it's always perfect for somebody out there. It's always a perfect combination. Like, you believe me, if I made a golf shaft, I would tell you it's the best golf shaft in the world, and I would say it fits everybody, right? Well, that's just not the truth. So this YouTuber then says, that comment you made is more aimed at me, not the company, which totally... It actually showed me two things. Maybe what I'm about to say is a little controversial. But that was not it at all. I said basically, hey, I'm sorry about that. I'll delete it, as that wasn't my intention. I'll delete this so that way, you know, nobody sees it and thinks that. You know, there was no aiming or firing shots on my part. That's not my intention. But I did use the word comical. So like the results were comical because they were. And apparently he took offense to this. So what that tells me, my experience with YouTubers is pretty spot on. If they're full-blown YouTubers, they're a little sensitive, super sensitive. Full-blown influencers sometimes can be a little sensitive. And here's why. And it's not such a bad thing, okay? So I'm going to say, this is the controversial part. I'm going to say, look, this isn't what I'm saying is bad. This is just the truth, and it's almost how it has to be. They are majority egocentric, must be right all the time, must be the best. Because if they're none of those things, then sometimes they question if what they're doing is actually good or not. And it comes down to the almighty like and how important that is. Otherwise, these YouTubers wouldn't say, like and subscribe, please, like and subscribe all the time. Now, look, some of these, I'm way off on these, okay? I'm getting too deep on this. But what I am saying is a little sensitive, because they've got to be told that they're good. That's part of being creative. If you're being creative and no one tells you you're good, or no one gives you good feedback, you are going to tire out and you're going to be less interested in continuing to do content. That's why some of them really struggle. with, this is tough. Some of them struggle upstairs just a little bit, but there's a good community for them. They're all surrounded by each other. I think it's a little too competitive for me. I just like to go on there, post a video every once in a while. Hey, like and subscribe. Sure. I don't give a fuck if you do or not. This is here for you. If you want it, if you don't want it, kiss my ass. I got a business to run. Actually, that's false. Don't kiss my ass. I still love you. Here's a good one. Hey, because I like when people talk about this. Favorite shafts to work with. Favorite fairway wood shafts to work with. What's been working in the fitting bay? What have you been selling a lot of? And what have, some of the products. So just looking at my wall, I've turned around. I seen it. And I got to say, like, right off the bat, some of my best fairway wood shafts as far as performers go have been LAGP's Axis line. The Axis line is amazing. Trono and Olis are fantastic. We do very well with Patterson. The Ballistic line is pretty fascinating. The launch and driver, the velocity has been really good. Obviously, everybody's up on Ventus. I've been okay with Ventus. I'd say that I'm just as successful in, Matori X and, the speeder line as I am Ventus. But most of the time when it comes to Ventus, people, golfers are coming to me going, this is what I want. So we sell a lot of Ventus because it's a hot shaft, but I haven't quite seen the results in the fitting bay like some of my peers have. But who knows? Maybe it's my fitting style. I don't know. And then, of course, like we do extremely well with the whole True Fam. So we do very well with the Hazardous line, all the way through the bag. The Blue RDX is fantastic. I've actually matched that extremely well for some players in the Cobra gear, which it's a stock option. So keep that in mind. The fact that, they don't have to pull extra money, $350 for the PVD version out of their pocket when they can just get the black with the blue writing, the stock RDX blue. For no upcharge from Cobra. I think TaylorMade's got it in there. A couple of companies have it in there. RDX Black's been fantastic in driver. Oh my gosh, that's easily our number one shaft that is easily accessible too. Tensi line, very well with Mitsubishi. Acura, we dominate with the TZ line. I mean, we just sell a million of them. So, and that's good in driver and fairway. And I'm excited we just announced, Acura just announced, but we've got them coming in. They're starting to ship this weekend. We've got the FX 3.0 line from Acura, which I am very pumped about as a fitter because it is something where you get someone dialed in to the driver. You then start going, well, let's see how it works in that series in the fairway wood. Let's see how that works in the hybrid, right, for juniors. For slow swingers, fast swingers, there's a shaft and a profile kind of there for everyone at a really good price point. So that being said, I mean, I know I just went all on the graphite shafts and basically touched up on everyone, not to be politically correct, but I mean, I didn't mention TPT and we sell the hell out of TPT. I don't know what selling the hell out of TPT is, but when it's a $550 or $575 shaft and you pump out, one every week or two, I feel like that's kind of pumping them out. So, I mean, little Fleming Island pumping out TPTs. Can you bend a wood or a hybrid with a bonded shaft to adjust loft? You can. It's definitely not the easiest thing to do. We just got an MR3 design, true blue loft and lie machine. I've yet to even attempt to put a metal wood in it. But I like seeing some of Trotty's videos because they've got a custom mold for, their woods to where it's a little safer to bend those. But of course you can bend those. It's just, do I mind trying to bend them? No, not at all. But it's not something I've done a whole bunch of. Let's see if we got, how to improve fitting for new equipment. I don't know. I don't know what that question necessarily means. Product cycles and the future of golf equipment. I'll just touch on product cycles. Everyone really gets pissed off about product cycles. It's a business. Every one of these companies are going to come out with a new line every year. New line doesn't necessarily mean you go get one, but somewhere out there, everybody needs a new driver or someone's ready for a new driver, I should say, or a new iron, whatever it may be. So Don't get so butthurt about product cycles. Just buy it. Don't worry about your gear. If it works for you, don't worry about what's new. You know, forget about that. Shane Long said, where do you see equipment heading in 5 to 10 years? I don't know. Where is it going? I have no idea. I like to think that shaft materials are getting better. And that's kind of something that hasn't been tapped into as far as rules. I don't think the rules of golf have really touched up on shafts and how much energy a shaft can deliver to a ball, to a club head, to a ball, whatever, to a ball through a club head. I don't know how you would say that. But I'd be curious to see where shafts are going and if they're going to kind of, if that's kind of the next spot. Obviously, there's been big improvements there, but if club heads are tapped out and the golf ball's getting close to tapped out, especially if they're going to kind of scale it back, then shafts, let's get these things, let's make these things really special. Autoflex, anyone? I always get questions on Autoflex. It's very, very fun. What is the single most important parameter in fitting, especially number-wise? Look, I want the ball going straight and I want them going far. So obviously, to do that, you've got to have a lot of things go right. You've got to have the right head. You've got to have the right shaft. Some people got to have all the way down to the right swing weight for them, and that can all make a big difference. So, you know, as far as like numbers I look at, you know, I look at ball speed. I look at launch and spin, of course. You know, I look at where the ball's finishing, you know. I like looking at its apex, things like that. Some players, you know, need a certain apex and a certain descent angle. So I know those are numbers that people really romanticize on. But I like kind of looking at what the club's doing, you know, for the most part through the ball. So I like really looking at lie angle and, you know, dynamic loft. So shaft can change both of those things. Club head and shaft can change both of those things. So, you know, I always talk about dynamic loft and how important it is. But I really like the fact that I can put one shaft in your hands and you could be a couple degrees toe down, and I put another shaft in your hands and all of a sudden you're toe up. I think that's really fascinating. So it's something more I'm getting into with Foresight and GC Quad, is getting more into lie angle, using dynamic lie angle. Something that it has kind of, you know, and me and my buddy Jorge Parada is a teacher at Liberty National. We were in here having kind of a coach and fitter nerd talk, and we were talking about, you know, if you're swinging your pitching wedge 9-iron different speeds than your 4-iron, 5-iron, shaft droop is a thing. You know, that's where through impact, the toe droop is kind of, because of the shaft, digging a little bit more than it should because it's actually drooping through the swing. Actually going in and optimizing the lie angle per club and ignoring the half degree increments. And then, you know, when you get into some other clubs, the quarter degree increments that some people romanticize about. I thought it was kind of a neat conversation him and I had, and it's something I'm going to kind of look at getting into personally with my own gear. Just, I can, right? That's part of it. I did say no questions involving the best low launch, low spin shaft. The answer, I will just say, it's so different than everybody else. None of these shafts are really meant to spin it a ton. I mean, maybe a little extra spin. I think the head kind of decides most of the launch and spin, but obviously you're going to get a little bit of that with the shaft. But I just tell everyone, look, the shaft is what delivers that club to the ball. So whichever shaft does that the best is going to give you the best launch and spin numbers that you're looking for. That's why it's so important to get fit for the right shaft and then kind of couple that with the right club head. Just very, very different. There's different ways to think about that or talk about that. I'm very much like, all right, well, let's find the shaft. And, you know, that shaft, there's going to be shaft 1A, shaft 1B, and then we've got to spend time with the club head because there's just so different, so many different variables with the club head. Let's see. What is the weirdest fit you have done? Strange player preference or launch condition? So I can say this. I worked with a college player today as I'm recording this. It was earlier today that, you know, we got him into something where, you know, he's hitting his TS2, like, I don't know, launching at 12, spinning at 24, and really this playable kind of 5-yard push cut. That's a pretty nice ball. And he's like, man, that's pretty good, right? And then we started going through things, and he's like, you know what I really want? I really want to just hit the ball so low. And he pointed on my screen. He's like, see where this one's peaking? I want it to be like half that. And not literally half that as far as the feet, but as far as what it actually looked like, we got his apex down to like 70 to 80 feet, and he loved it. Loved it. And I'm sitting here going, oh, this could be bad. This could be really bad on the golf course. But made such a big difference for that player and what he wanted to see. So that's a weird situation, right? You know, I'm sitting here trying to launch it as high as I can and, you know, bomb it. And he's sitting here trying to hit dingers. Let's see. What brand has surprised you the most in the past few years? Well, I've been somebody that's been playing Cobra the past few years, and that brand never surprised me, but surprised so many people. And I think My Golf Spy did a little bit of a test, like word association test. And I think Cobra was kind of hanging tough as far as, what do you call it? Innovative. Maybe that was one where they tested high-end. Cool. A cool company. They were one. Young, hip, whatever. But there's a lot of performance there. They are a little underrated, I would say. But as far as performance goes, you know, the brand that surprised me the most in the past few years, I don't know. I'm surprised that people spend the amount of money they do on Mira because it's quite amazing, but it's quite expensive. So that brand straight up surprises me that they are so good that people still don't care and spend all the money in the world. And clearly they feel, look, and perform as good as anything. So, you know, with that being said, Mira is a little bit of a surprise to me. Not a question, but we've got a changing arm lock. Ew. Well, I'm going back and forth from arm lock. I said I'm sold on arm lock, but I took an old Betty that I had laying around that Bettinardi MC3. I have no idea what this putter's from, but it looks like a Terillium. All right, it's got a honeycomb Terillium insert. It's got this like discernible click. As soon as you hit it, you just like, you know. And I'm just going to mess with that for the time being. And I'll tell you this about arm lock. Every time I go from arm lock, it makes me a better putter and some other putter. And then every time I go to another putter, it makes me a better putter and arm lock. So I don't quite know. I think I'm just a head case, y'all. I'm just going to start putting the ball in the fucking hole. Simple as that. I'm really pumped, by the way, this weekend, the A&A Inspiration. Is that what it is? Is it the A&A? I'm just looking at the LPGA Tour, the A&A Inspiration. Yeah. Man, that's a cool golf course. I got a couple girls I'm rooting for in that one. I'd like to see Mel Reed continue to play really well. Thought she was gonna do it this past week, but MB Park just never gave anybody else a chance. And then Valero Texas Open. I think Jordan Spieth's playing. Dude, is that guy not the favorite for the Masters next week? He has to be. He has to be. I'm so into Jordan Spieth playing well this week in Texas and then going to next week into the Masters. I can't believe the Masters is here. The Augusta National Women's Amateur. It's going to be such a badass. We've got like the best 10 days of golf that we're going to have for quite a while. Speaking of that, I am not doing U.S. Open qualifying this year, and I'm heartbroken. It's definitely one of those things where you go, man, if you turn it on, you can do it, but I'm not going to do it. Just not going to do it. I don't know. I shot 80 in a tournament. Shoot 80 in a tournament, you could do that in U.S. Open qualifier. They're going to laugh you out of the golf tournament. But I'm just going to spend some time with my grandma and grandpa. They're coming to town. Sorry, I'm getting quiet because I'm trying to read through these while speaking to you a little bit. 47-inch driver, opinion, full send. Just get the, got to get the head weight right on the driver. If you're going to go long, you need to go lighter on that club head. So give it a run. It's kind of fun. Best game improvement irons, period. Let's put game improvement as like shovels, right? SimMax OS has been dominating for us in the game improvement category. So I've been enjoying those. And we've been actually fitting a lot of no upcharge, the stock KBS, I think MT or HT. I'm not sure which one it is. I think MT. It's supposed to be a higher launching shaft, higher spinning shaft, but it's just been super easy for people to hit. So Been doing a lot of those, maybe like 4 or 5 sets in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks with those. That's a lot for me, you know, to just do a stock build. Most of what we do is pretty custom. So let's just try a couple more. I like questions like this, right? What are your thoughts on T100s? They're great, but you aren't getting them until at least June unless you get a stock order off the shelf. Isn't that sad? So sad. But I think Ryan Barath from Golf WRX, he posted something that was like, give your fitters a break. The OEMs are struggling to get them product. It's not your fitters' fault. Your clubs are taking 6 weeks. Not like we're just sitting on golf clubs. So, you know, sometimes we're even waiting on just a shaft or a grip. This guy ordered a full set, a full rebuild from me, and he got his entire set built, ready to roll, except the 8-iron. He had to wait 4 extra weeks just to get the 8-iron built. So that being said, it's not just club heads. And then we got a thoughts on P770s with Dynamic Gold Tour Issue S400s. Well, if the 770 fits you very well and the S400 fits you very well, I love that. What a setup. That's such a good setup. You should buy them all. But if it doesn't, man, I think that's a trash setup for you, dude. Trash setup. I don't even know who you are, but if it don't fit you, it's trash. Dylan wants to know club head versus shaft, which do you think is more important and why? I talked about this a little bit. Simple answer. Both are equally important. Here's my thing. And I tell people this, when we're trying to decide what the right shaft is, the most important thing in the world to me is the shaft. Once we've kind of come to that answer, the most important thing in the world to me is the club head. So it changes. From that point, you know, like it just kind of ebbs and flows. What are we trying to figure out? If somebody comes to me and says, hey, I just need to reshaft my driver and there's nothing you can do to get me into another head, well, then the shaft's pretty freaking important all of a sudden, right? So let's see. I think I'm going to grab 2 more here. General question here, product and general info to know before testing counterbalance shafts. Unfortunately, I'm not going to give you the answer you want because the answer you want is a definitive answer probably. And I'm going to tell you that, you know, the obvious is the why. Counterbalance shaft, if somebody prefers or swings better with a lighter swing weight, the counterbalance shaft can help that. Or if someone fits into a certain counterbalance shaft and it allows them to get a heavier head weight without increasing the swing weight, then general info, that's what that's going to kind of come down to. It's going to be all about that. All right, that's the whole deal of counterbalancing. And that's just not a counterbalance shaft, but that's even counterbalancing, you know, putting some weight at the end of a grip, you know, or something like that. Or getting some of those, what do they call it, Torlock? Torlock, I think Sergio used counterweights for the longest of times. It's kind of a feel thing. He somewhat discovered that fits him a little bit better and performs better for him. So if fitting isn't readily available, is it smart to match wood shafts if you found one you like? If fitting isn't readily available and I had a driver shaft that I really liked, first thing I would do is try the same shaft in a heavier weight, same flex. So like if I've got a 60 gram, you know, X flex, I would get a 70 gram X flex to try on my 3-wood before going too crazy. But if you don't have fitting, there might be a little bit of, some tinkering, some give and take with that situation. Last one. What is the most underutilized part of a fitting? Example, ball, grips, lie. The ball is pretty important. I don't think it's the most underutilized, especially nowadays, because we're talking about it more and more, but the ball is pretty friggin' important. I'm currently messing with, so some of my favorite golf balls the past year have been the Bridgestone Torby XS, the Bridgestone Torby X, the Pro V1 X, the new Pro V1 X, the 2021 version. I get a lot of ball speed out of it. And it's different. When I just put that ball down versus another ball, it seems like that one's easier to get ball speed out of. So I don't know what that is. And then the new TP5 and TP5X, I'm hitting them with irons a little bit, and I've messed with them inside just a tick, messed with them outside just a tick. I need to do a head-to-head is what I need to do, really, to really get a comparison. Because when I just put a TP5X, I've like one shot, I'll get a weird flight with it or a weird ball, but then all of a sudden on the next hole, it's fine. So it's like, was that a bad shot? What was it? You know, and I don't seem to get any of the crazy shots with the Pro V1X. So I love Pro V1X left hash, by the way. But ball fitting is pretty important, and it's just the next step, right, in fitting. Once we get everything down, figured out. But I think the most underutilized information is how important the club head is, and you know, because we spend all this time, especially in the fitting industry, to upcharge you, make sure we're making money by doing custom builds and getting the right shaft in your hand. And trust me, it's necessary. But so we hammer home like, get fit for the right shaft, get fit for the right shaft. Well, of course you need to get fit for the right shaft, but I think we hammered home, and I'm not going to say we, I'm going to say the people before I really got into this, hammered home the shaft thing that I've now got to sit back here and tell you like how important the club head is. We can take the same shaft and I can change the ball flight much easier by changing out the club head. That's for me, that's just what I find. And maybe that's a better understanding of club head than shaft. And maybe I need to flip that and I need to get better with understanding shaft and shaft profiles and what works for somebody. But I really feel like I can do a good job with, club head as far as that goes. But I think it's underutilized how important the club head is versus the shaft, because we've talked about shaft so freaking much. Last couple years, it's been like shaft, shaft, shaft. But I think a part of that's a marketing tactic. I even hear commercials on, PGA Tour, Sirius XM radio. Got to get fit for the right shaft. It's the most important thing. Well, I've got 800 million shafts here. It is pretty freaking important. But I also have a bunch of different club heads, and they all seem to do a different thing. So thanks for the questions, as always. I like when you hit me up on Instagram, and you seriously do give me questions. I like when it's organized, and I can just pull them instead of kinds of onesie twosies. But let's... If you're listening to the podcast and you want a question seriously answered, don't DM me. This is the first time I've ever said don't DM me. Shoot me an email, please. It's briangolfllc@gmail.com. Brian Golf, Brian with a Y, briangolfllc@gmail.com. Email me. It's easier for me to track. Okay, so how about that? Let's do that for any follow-up questions, anything along those lines. Next week on the podcast, the Brian Golf Show presented by Pinned Golf, we're going to get into the Masters. We're just going to do a little Masters preview. Maybe I'll grab a friend. We'll shoot the shit a little bit on who we think is going to win the Masters. Now, it's very weird doing this because it wasn't too long ago we were doing a Masters episode, that Masters preview show, and it was like November. So it is very weird, but I'm excited for Augusta, excited to see Augusta back in the spring, April. I'm an April baby, birthday's April 24th. So I kind of like kicking off the old birthday month with the Masters. It'll be pretty cool. So again, thanks for all the questions. Appreciate you listening. Can't wait to talk Augusta next week with you on the Brian Golf Show, presented by Pinned Golf.